All right, you're back in the DFSR. It's an NFL podcast. It's Wednesday. It's September 30th. I'm Doug Norrie, and over there is...
James Davis.
And we are coming at you with a cash game... Oh, I was going to say article, but we already wrote the article. Cash game plays for FanDuel and DraftKings Week 4. Coming off an interesting Week 3 in that when lineups locked... I want to talk about this for a couple seconds. We don't do the recap podcast anymore, which is cool, but I think we can spend like 2 minutes here at the top just talking about this. Lineups lock at 1 o'clock Eastern, and we look at our ownership percentages on both sites, DraftKings and FanDuel, and it's really low for our cash games. Like, we have Calvin Ridley at like no ownership with no Julio Jones, Russell Gage sort of the same way, Jerick McKinnon, who that was a guy we were fence sitting on, but ultimately decided on, all really low ownership. And I thought to myself, oh, this is amazing. Like, we did it. Like, this is going to be cash and GPP top of the top. Like, we're going to cash our cash games at the top of the GPP stacks because we have just stumbled into a situation where either we've missed major news or, which I actually thought about for a second because
which we didn't.
And, or our thought process and our inputs and just whatever else we're doing is just different in a way that I was so happy about. I mean, I'm going to bury the lead here a little bit. It didn't exactly work. We had some injuries. Gage gets hurt. Jordan Reed we had gets hurt. It didn't like necessarily work out, but process wise, I was all about it when I saw the ownership in a way that we've been here before with this kind of thing and thought a little uneasy about where we landed with our process compared to the field. And this was not a situation where I felt that at all. You felt the same way, right? I'm kind of rehashing because we talked a little bit off the air, but I think it's worth mentioning here about how a process can take you to a place that is divergent and good. And I don't want to be results-based about this because, look, like I said, Gage gets hurt. That's a huge thing. Ridley gets like 12 targets, only converts on 5 of them. Toe taps a touchdown in the one. I mean, there's lots of little – McKinnon drops a touchdown. Reed drops a touchdown. Like, there's little things that happen that kind of don't end up working. But as a process-wise, it was the first time I've been majorly off chalk and felt really, really good about it when the kicks are going up in the air.
Yeah, I think that's pretty good framing, actually. I think what happens often when we run into a situation like this is that sort of the public has decided on a certain player or a certain game that they're just going to play, numbers be damned, basically. Like, or they're just going to stretch for it, maybe is a fairer way to put it. Where they say, like, yeah, maybe all these guys in the Dallas and Seattle game are a little bit too expensive, but we're just going to go for it, right? Mm-hmm. And so when that happens, there's a cascading effect where, let's say, you know, we're playing a quarterback that's 2,000 cheaper than everyone else, right? And that, I don't know if that's exactly what happened, but let's say it's something like that. Then all of the rest of our plays are going to be off chalk too, right? Just because, even if they're great plays, because other people are going to look and maybe they would like to play Calvin Ridley, but they simply can't afford it because they've allocated their money elsewhere. So I think that's pretty much what happened. Like, people looked at that Dallas-Seattle game with the big total and just went for it. I still agree with our process on not doing that. I think I still agree with the premise that scoring gets spread out in for both of those teams in a somewhat unpredictable way, with the possible exception of like the quarterbacks and Tyler Lockett. But, you know, like Michael Gallup was in the FanDuel Million winning lineup. Nobody played him in cash, right? So how much of the big total was he eating up with his production? So, I'm still comfortable with the approach. Obviously, it didn't get there this time, but that's the way of the road.
Yeah, and, you know, guys like Ken and Drake were chalk. I didn't really want to do that. I sort of understand, but the snaps, like, we're trying to... I'm getting real fickle with these running back situations.
No, I feel really great about how we did with running back. I didn't want to play Kenyon Drake.
Yeah, so. We ended up with Jacob. No, I keep saying Jacobs. We had Jonathan Taylor, Miles Sanders, and Jerick McKinnon, all of which, you know, I feel fine with. Anyway, just not to belabor it too much, but I thought it was interesting in a way that it's usually not, because the first couple of weeks we were basically all the way on chalk, and so it's not like our process has changed at all. We're very confident in the way it's, you know, we produce this kind of thing, and so when our exact same process yields different results in a week where other weeks it had yielded chalk, I always find that very interesting. And sometimes, like I said, like this will be my final point, sometimes there's a sense of unease. Like, you know, I said, you know, if we found out that X was 70% start going into the Sunday and we didn't have that player, would we feel uncomfortable? We talk about this situation a lot. And I say, yeah, there are situations like that. This was not one of them. When I saw Drake, all right, when I predicted Jake's ownership was going to be like that, I didn't feel uncomfortable with that play. That wasn't something that worried me. We're going to get into week four cash game plays right now. Some of this, we're starting to see a lot of just kind of week over week similarities in just who the values are. And I think that's going to short of injury, we're just kind of staring down the barrel at things like this because certain teams have just made it known how they're going to operate at this point. And short of injury, there hasn't really been a price correction enough on some of these guys to really flip on how we view them in terms of cash game. So I do think in some ways our cash game picks this week are going to not mirror, but are going to be similar to what we had last week. And I'll start with Kyler Murray. He was a chalk play. We had him on DraftKings. He was basically like in 80% of our top 100 FanDuel lineups. I think he was in FanDuel lineup two, and Cam Newton was in lineup one. He was kind of underwhelming last week in a pretty bad loss they took to the Lions. I do think that we can trot him right back out here in cash. And I do think just because, and I will say it's weird though, because we're in a situation with quarterback where they're the top of this quarterback tier. There's just a group of dudes that are so good that I do think you can play really any of them. And at that point, you're probably just looking for the cheapest guy. I'm going to put that group at least in the main slate, Russell Wilson. I'm going to probably put Dak in that group, Kyler Murray, Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson, Pat Mahomes, and I'm going to throw one other guy at the end here. Would you say that group, though, is like they're so far head and shoulders above everybody else, but sort of picking between them is like really to me probably only comes down to price. Does that make sense?
Because, matchup too.
And matchup. Yeah, that was a stupid omission that I didn't put in there. Yes, matchup too. Between at that point, it's just really just matchup and price because, and I guess you could say that about every position, but not really. Do you agree with that? Like, I'm kind of stumbling here, but I do. I just think that there's this group. I could have written up any one of those six guys. Probably ultimately chose Kyler because the matchup's great, and he's in the lower third tier of that pricing in that group.
Well, so what happens? What I think you're pinning down, which is something we've been saying for years, is that dual threat quarterbacks are always going to be safer
yes.
than the rest. Every one of those guys. Those are kind of the six definitive. Or five or six. I can't remember if you threw Cam in there or not. Definitive dual threat quarterbacks. And when you get that, like Kyler, you know, back to swing it back over to Kyler. Yeah, he actually had a bad week from a real life football perspective. And he still punched out 24.7 FanDuel points. If he averaged 24.7 FanDuel points, that would have been the second highest FanDuel points per game average from last season behind only Lamar Jackson, right? So even on his... Even when he misses, he can't miss. You know what I mean? And this is also incidentally why I didn't like Kenyon Drake, because he also had the rushing touchdown. He's up to four rushing touchdowns right now. If you're going to, average a rushing touchdown a game, that'd be unheard of. But that's what we're looking at so far. And the floor that brings to the table, bringing 9-10 points from your running game, means you don't have to do much on the passing side in order to get there. So yeah, I love Murray this week. I think you're right. I think we'll probably key in on the running quarterback with the best matchup. Also, you know, there is something to be said for how much of your team's offense you account for. So I would say Murray generally is going to be safer than someone like Dak going forward, just because we know that there are still a lot of, you know, outstanding Ezekiel Elliott touchdowns coming, right?
Right.
Like we saw Dak's week one, where he played pretty much fine, only scored 17 fantasy points, because there are other ways that offense can score. So... yeah, so I love Murray this week, is a long story short.
He gets Carolina. Carolina's the bottom third defense to start the season, that was just pretty much predicted going in. We knew the defense was going to be bad. They have not disappointed, however you want to phrase that, from a positive or a negative. They've been very bad. I did write up Russ, too, because you just have to at this point. The numbers are just completely ludicrous, what he's doing to start the season. The only hesitancy I have about playing him is that it just doesn't seem like he can keep this up because if he just keeps this up, like, you know, completing 77% of his passes, 14 touchdowns to one interception, he has easily the most yards per attempt in the top group. He's ranked, I think, fourth in yards, but he has, you know, 11. Okay, I'll put it this way. He's fourth in yards, but Dak's first. He has 40 fewer passing attempts than Dak. He's played a whole game less in terms of passing attempts than Dak has, and he's only 200 yards behind him. So if you don't write him up, it's crazy, basically, at this point. And I'm still kind of on the fence about whether it's even sustainable, specifically with the touchdowns. Now, you want to say maybe the touchdowns drop and the yards pick up. Chris Carson's hurt. Maybe they throw the ball even more than they have been, which for them is a lot, which compared to the NFL still isn't that much. That's fine. And I'm just like, you just can't, you're being intellectually dishonest to not write them up. And I, with the little caveat of, it just feels crazy to keep this up for an entire season. And he's like a top 1-2 quarterback in the league. You know what I mean? So I think I'd be fine playing him. I think you'll probably see people playing him. And I would just say, it doesn't feel like the touchdowns can keep going at this rate for the passing attempts. And if there's any quarterback in the league, maybe other than the Mahomes, that can keep up that kind of rate, then that he's probably the guy.
Yeah, that sounds right to me. Just the incredible accuracy, that's not new. Like a lot of what we're seeing is just kind of an amplified version of what we already knew was there, right? And while he probably won't finish this season with 90 passing touchdowns, I think the consistency is going to be there in a way. Because the thing is, of this group of guys that we've discussed, with the exception of Patrick Mahomes, he's just the best pure passer of the group. And in an odd way, like we talk about how the running game gives you a high floor, also just being really, really, really good at passing gives you a high floor. And so, yeah, I think you're spot on. It seems one way or the other. I don't know if you agree with this as well, that we'll be on FanDuel, we're going to be paying up at quarterback this week.
I think we're going to be paying up just for the whole season. I think that's
probably right. I think the floor is just too much right now.
And that's why I just mentioned this group of guys. I think this group of guys is short of injuries somewhere. And even the injuries for quarterbacks doesn't matter because it's usually just such a downgrade from talent. So it just doesn't.
You don't get those random backups. You know, it's kind of funny because we, in our ebook over at dfsr.com/ebooks, we talk about positional volatility. And this is something that's kind of ridden different waves, I think it's fair to say. Like, you know, sometimes the top wide receivers are actually less volatile than the top running backs. They kind of jockey for position. Tight end is always a mess with incredible volatility. But high-end quarterbacks, I would be curious for this year, because I don't think we've done it so far, if you went back and looked at that volatility among the high-end quarterbacks, because I have to think any variance that there is variance to the good side, right? Like, there's no version of Kyler Murray going out there and scoring 7 fantasy points in the same way that you can have for top-end wide receivers, let's say. So, or even Derrick Henry, right? Derrick Henry was consensus the best running back. I think it was going into week two or week three. I can't remember which week it was for him that he just disappeared completely. Oh, it was week two. Going into week two, people are like, you know, us included, Derrick Henry can't miss. And then he had 84 total yards, right? There's no version of that for quarterback. And since you're basically paying the same amount, like if you compare Kyler at 8,400 to Derrick Henry at 8,500, isn't it just a clear, the no-brainerest of no-brainers to say that Murray's safer? Of course it is, right?
Okay, so I have the numbers real quick. I pulled it up while I ran the query real quick while you're talking. It's crazy. So the top, and we're going to get to this in a second. Actually, the top DraftKings scoring guy this season is Alvin Kamara, which really, that kind of creeped over on last Sunday when he just had a bananas game and he's just now getting all of Michael Thomas's targets. So we're going to talk about Kamara in a second. But if you look at coefficient of variation, which is just standard deviation divided by mean, so Kamara is 0.23. So by the way, the higher the number, the more volatile they are. So 0.23 is Kamara. Wilson is 0.05. So like, I don't know, 5 times less volatile than him. And then the next guy is Josh Allen. So Kamara, Wilson's number 2, Josh Allen's 3rd. He's 0.08, so 3 times less volatile. And then you get to like Dak, who's more volatile, but that's because the yards and the touchdowns have been all the way up there. But then you go down to like Mahomes, less volatile than Kamara. Kyler way less, and then at 0.12. I know that I hate to be like in the reading decimal point numbers because it's super boring. But the point being that you were correct. Running this very quickly shows that these quarterbacks that are at the top of scale are even more than other years. I'm sure if I went back to other years, this group would not be as deep, right? There would still be guys like Mahomes, for instance, last year would be one of these guys that was just incredibly consistent. There's just more of them now. I think that's really what it is. And it's because the dual threat is just – these guys are all just dual threats. And whenever you can do both things, your floor is just so much higher. That's really what it is. Like Aaron Rodgers is going to have a tougher time being as consistent like this because he just doesn't run as much. And by the way, I'm right because he's more volatile than any of that group that I just named. So, yeah, it's just interesting. I think we can probably move past this. The other guys I wrote up, I just in the interest of writing someone that isn't in that top group, I did write up Joe Burrow because he's been pretty good to start the season and he is cheaper. Probably he's definitely not going to be a cash game play that I prioritize over any of those guys. But I don't know. Kind of just wanted to write up somebody different, and I thought he was interesting, and he's been pretty good to start the season, and I do think the touchdowns tick up. He has a good matchup this week. One other quick guy I want to get your opinion on, and we're going to move on. We always end up spending more time on quarterbacks and then kind of race to the finish. Deshaun Watson has been really pretty bad to start the season. I think going into the year, we would have put him in that group that we just mentioned, but we just can't because of what he's done. He's also had an absolutely brutal run of matchups to start the season. He had to play Baltimore, Pittsburgh, and KC. Now, whatever you want to say about how those teams operate on defense, like KC just held Baltimore 20 points, right? Pittsburgh, we know, is a very good defense. Baltimore, we know, is a very good defense. He this week gets his best matchup of the season against – oh, I just had it in front of me. I wrote it up too. Yeah, sorry. He gets Minnesota in a really high total game. Like, this is way beyond – would you be interested in seeing a bounce back week from him? Because now his 3 weeks of being pretty bad have actually priced him way under that group. But definitely going into the season, we would have put him in that group. So I'm just real quick, give me 10 seconds worth of thoughts on Watson.
Yeah, I mean, so for starters, Watson's a great big tournament play here. I think a lot of that big tournament ownership is going to be gobbled up among the top group that we described. And Watson, I think going into I'm trying to figure out, see if I can just off the cuff remember what we had him projected for in that KC game, because I know if for our single game showdown lineups, we had a lot of Watson in the MVP slot, you know, like if we put in our top 50
he
lineups.
Or he wasn't the same as Mahomes.
It wasn't the same as Mahomes.
Way less than, right.
Yeah. So, I certainly find it to be an interesting discussion. I think there's good reason to believe that the Texans offense is fundamentally worse this year than it was last year. So that's the one knock against Watson, you know, where those other guys, we know that they can make it work in their current offensive structure. We're not sure about Watson just yet, right? Like Will Fuller is supposed to be the heir apparent to DeAndre Hopkins. You get no catches against Baltimore, right? So I think there are some big time issues there. You know, the insistence on continuing to give David Johnson dead plays, right? I mean, talk about like, it's really hard to get eviscerated in a kind of a one for one trade, but boy, did the Texans try hard to do just that. It's been disgusting in the last two games for him. 11 for 34 against Baltimore, 13 for 23. Yeah, tough matchups, but those are not the numbers you're hoping to see. So anyway, I think Watson, you can't play him in cash. You can't try to guess right on the week that he returns for cash, I don't think, but it wouldn't shock anyone if he finishes the year averaging the same, you know, 22-ish fantasy points a game the way he did last year.
Yeah. Anyway, just interesting. I get the weapons are worse, but this is a good matchup. Minnesota bottom third defense. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back and we'll talk about some of these running backs.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
510 is declaring an emergency. There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
All right, running backs. Now, last week we walked into this week playing Taylor, felt really good about that. Playing Miles Sanders, felt good about that. For some reason, the Eagles stopped running the ball with him, even though they were chewing up yards. Where do we want to start with running back? I do feel like there's, much like quarterback, there is a group of just no doubt usage guys. I don't want to say production because I think usage and production are a little different, but I think we want to base it a little on usage here. There's a group at the top and then the group stops pretty quickly. I think that's if I want to sum it up correctly. Where do we want to start with running back this week, knowing we're probably already starting by paying up a quarterback?
Yeah, so the way it's shaking out for us just on a high level in terms of our optimal lineups right now is that we are landing with an expensive quarterback, fairly expensive running backs, and then, you know, kind of making it work through wide receiver. Like, we don't have any wide receivers over 7,500 in our optimal lineups on FanDuel right now. And the guys that we're targeting specifically, well, there's two of them. So one is Derrick Henry. you know, I think many people and even us to some level are ready to pour dirt on Henry after he was so disappointing on a fantasy level going into week two. I did ultimately, or going into week three, I did ultimately write him up in that week just because, you know, we've talked about how opportunity trumps talent. And last year, Henry had both the opportunity and the talent. So that's what made him, you know, a $9,000 plus back that people were happily jamming in cash throughout the season. This year, he might be more heavy on opportunity than talent. But hey, if you're going to get the ball 29 times a game, which is basically what he's averaging so far, you don't need to be very good on a per-touch basis. If you're going to get your goal line carries to boot, you don't need to be too great on a per-touch basis. So Henry goes up against Pittsburgh this week. It's not a matchup many people are going to be excited about for obvious reasons. Pittsburgh, the best team in the NFL against the run so far. But I also want to call out Pittsburgh's matchup so far because they've gone against the Giants with Barkley hurt, the Broncos, and the Texans with David Johnson, right? So Pittsburgh, absolute dream matchups in terms of going up against opposing running games. And I don't think they're as good as they've been so far. And Vegas, you know, this game is waffled. Tennessee opened as 1.5-point favorites. The line got bet to Pittsburgh -2. It's kind of been dancing around there since. I don't think this is going to be a blowout by any stretch. And I think Tennessee's path towards being involved in this game goes through Derrick Henry. So I would be fine going back to Derrick Henry this week, even at a pretty high price point.
Yeah, he gets there on the touchdowns last week, for sure. So I think that you like to see, you know, that part of this game being solidified is still worth a lot in a way that you really can't say about a lot of running backs. And that the plan when they're down and close is to give the ball to him, basically basically wipe out any running back from the teams that I mentioned with the expensive quarterbacks, because that's what their plan is, to run those guys down and close. Henry doesn't fall into that category, so that's good. I'm still in the wheels coming off sooner than later for Henry. Just have to be.
Agreed.
I think we just have to be sort of waiting for it. And he's carried the ball now between last season, the postseason, and this season. He's carried the ball almost 500 times, like 470 times or something like that over the last...
Seems like a lot.
That is like 24 games. It's just a completely unsustainable number. The history on this is so bad. It's not even bad. It just is what it is. Like you carry the ball a lot. You eventually one day you wake up and it's over. That's it. That's the whole story of these running backs. It's just, there's like one guy, again, Adrian Peterson, there's one guy, everyone else, it just ends. And so but that's not to say it's going to happen this week, because if they're going to get the ball 30 times, that's a lot of floor. So I think I'm with you. It's an interesting point about the Steelers matchup so far. I'm buying that. Tennessee is 2-point underdogs at home. That line feels kind of wrong to me. I know our betting system thinks they're just outright favorites to win here. So like Henry, where do you want to go after him? I mean, we have, real quick, this is the group that I would put in that no doubt usage guys: Zeke, Derrick Henry, probably Josh Jacobs. Can't put Jonathan Taylor in that group anymore. Not Eckler. Cook is weird. I actually might put Mike Davis in that group. James Robinson. And I guess Clyde Edwards-Helaire, right? Like, that is that it? This is the main slate group. Even Kamara.
I wasn't prepared to answer that, like a list like that. I don't know. But there aren't as many as there used to be. I think it's the fair point. Kamara, you mentioned. I do think he's a great DraftKings play going into this week, just because the target share is absolutely outrageous right now. So 8 targets, 9 targets. Now that Thomas is out of the picture, 14 targets, caught 13 balls for 139 yards and 2 touchdowns. He's always a weird one for my brain to process a little bit, because oftentimes we're doing this guy is a running back and 70% of a wide receiver, let's say, in the best case. Right. Kamara is a wide receiver one and 50% of a running back. So as long as you understand that, then I think you can properly evaluate him. For cash on FanDuel, I would not be interested at all. Kamara's production so far has been super, super touchdown heavy. I mean, he's scoring 2 touchdowns a game. He has not been a touchdown hawk for them in the past. And we have many years of that being sort of the established track record. He's not going to finish with 30 touchdowns, obviously. So if you figure great running backs are good for 1 touchdown a game, you're talking about shaving 6 fantasy points a game off of his production so far. And it would still be excellent, of course, but right now he looks like a rich man's Christian McCaffrey from last year, and that's That's not what he is.
All right, give me after him. Sorry, I didn't mean to read the list. I was kind of just going off of like where I'm trying to land in the trust.
Oh, I don't mind reading category. The list. I'm just not going to be able to, when I hear the list, I'm not going to be able to spitball like who was off the list. I just wasn't ready for that.
Other guys besides Henry then. And I think, like I said, I think we are playing Kamara on DraftKings. You just can't ignore the targets for a full PPR at this point.
Yeah, I agree with that. So a guy I'd like to go back to the well on, and I'm curious to know your thoughts, is Clyde Edwards-Helaire. So he's kind of in the opposite situation as Kamara in that he's very, very run heavy. He's getting a ton of opportunities, right? So against on Monday Night Football against the Ravens, he had 26 opportunities. So that's targets plus carries. Turned that into 134 yards. So a great start. The fly in the ointment for Edwards-Helaire is that he's not getting into the end zone. And actually, part of that could be luck, but part of that could be structural. He's a smaller guy. You know, on Thursday Night Football, for instance, he against the Texans to open the season, he was getting those goal line carries and just not converting them, right? So, and on a per-touch basis, it's not been super pretty, right? But with 6 targets last game, 8 targets the prior game, obviously super high-value targets in that offense. The overall yards per game have been as safe as they could possibly be. So I'm curious to know your thoughts. Does he pass that sniff test for you? Because if he were scoring touchdowns at the same rate as the other guys in this usage range, then he would be 8,000 plus, but he's not. So what do you think about going back to Clyde Edwards-Helaire here, knowing that this could be an off-chalk player?
Yeah, no, I think the opportunity is there. He's the snaps are there. I look at snaps first for some of these guys because I just need to know that they're going to be on the field, like for the majority, and that was really pretty much the case. 52 of the 75 offensive snaps. You love to see that from running back at this point in this day and age. The 6 targets are good. I do think the plan. He's still in those packages. He's still in the packages. Coming into like the goal line situations or like when they are close, they do score a lot of long touchdowns, and so that's always going to probably screw him up a little. Also, just because the offense is so dynamic, they had that the weird underhanded play to Sherman the other day. So this is one of those situations where not to say that anyone's due for touchdowns, but I just think that, yes. It's a long-winded way to say, yeah, this is a fine situation for him, though. I think people will probably still play him. I don't think it's, like, necessarily crazy off chalk. And I'm just in a scenario now where he's part of that small group of guys that I can trust or at least just going to be on the field for, like, 75% of the team snaps. And that, to me, is good enough. I agree with that.
I think people are going to be spooked by when they see the name the Patriots in the matchup. I think that could push people away as well, but that just ignores, I mean, Vegas's opinion of this game, right? The Chiefs are 7-point favorites. The Pats defense has just been a pale imitation of what it was last year. They've allowed 4.6 yards per carry this year, for instance, which is in the bottom half of the league. I think I'm just like excited to play Clyde Edwards-Helaire at this low price point. I think whenever, like, the way you can buy low on guys in the NFL is when they're not scoring touchdowns. That's like the discount that you get, right? Because other things tend to normalize fairly quickly, target conversion for wide receivers or, yards per carry, things like that. You kind of are who you are. One area that fluctuates pretty wildly is getting touchdowns. I mean, in the not too distant past, people were saying Alvin Kamara can never get in the end zone, right? Like, that was the whole thing. And we would play him and people would say, but he can't score touchdowns. It's like, well, actually he just can, right? he scored 6 through 3 games. I think there will be a stretch like that for Edwards-Helaire as well, and the price will come up. So if I'm looking for trying to get discounts at higher ticket running backs, this is the way to do it.
Yeah, I agree. And I think, he's like 7th or 8th most expensive running back on FanDuel. That's a really pretty good spot to be with this kind of usage. I think he's a little more expensive on DraftKings relative to the field. I don't know. I take that back. Maybe he's even lower. Yeah, he's like, so it's interesting. Edwards-Helaire on DraftKings is cheaper than Jonathan Taylor. I'd much rather have CH at this point in terms of like just what I know the opportunity is going to be. He's less expensive
than James Conner. And what the offense is capable of, right? I mean, this is... Yeah.
Yes.
I'm with you for sure.
So anyway, any other guys? Let me just throw out a couple names for you. Mike Davis, James Robinson. These are like some cheaper guys. They kind of do fit the mold for me. Any of these guys interest you in cash?
Yeah, I thought about both Robinson and Davis in kind of like the cheap slot because you do run out of money basically once you go expensive quarterback. And if you're going to play you know, spend, say, $16,000 at running back, that's going to leave you with not too much left over. And I think Davis is actually pretty interesting here. You know, the Panthers came out and shocked everyone by just sticking right there with the Chargers. And a lot of that was due to Mike Davis's ability to just kind of be a poor man's Christian McCaffrey, right? Like, he's not considered to be the same talent, but he caught 8 of the 9 balls thrown his way for 45 yards and a touchdown. And that's pretty darn good production, like on DraftKings, of course, at sub 6,000. But on FanDuel at 63, that's not so bad either. And he also had 13 carries. So I think really he was just contributing across all phases of the offense. And so Panthers come into this game, 4-point underdogs. You don't love to see that when you're playing a running back, but if you're involved in a passing game, that does mitigate some of the, you know, depressed production you might get from your team being behind. So, yeah, I don't know if I'd be pumped to play Mike Davis, but I could definitely do it and not feel too guilty. And Robinson, you know, it's basically almost the same exact speech. I think you're going to be concerned with the Jags because they've just shown flashes of being as bad as everyone thought they were, like against Miami, for instance. And Robinson's line was buoyed against Miami by having those 2 touchdowns. And, you know, he caught 6 balls as well. But I think people are going to be unnecessarily bullish on him after the Miami game because it was the, you know, Thursday night slate. People got to watch. He was great from fantasy purposes, but he's not going to turn 6 targets into 83 yards very often, and he's not going to turn 11 carries into 2 touchdowns very often either. So I do think there is some regression to the mean coming there.
Yeah, I think Davis is kind of a lock for me. If like this is going to be, he played 79% of the snaps. They're just using him as McCaffrey. Yeah. That's just it. I get that he's a lesser version in terms of talent. The team's not that good. If you're just going to be on the field that much, it just
back to opportunity.
That feels. If you're just gonna be on the field, even if you're losing, that's all I care about, right? Sometimes with some of these bad teams, if you're on the field and even when you're losing, that's fine for me. You can be on a bad team. It's just when you're not on the field when you're losing, that's a problematic place to be. So, okay, we can move off this. Let's talk wide receiver. I think we are gonna have to go a little cheaper at wide receiver this week, just because of the nature of the other positions. I started with Tyler Lockett. He's just, you know, he's 4th overall in targets this season. The price has not come anywhere close to coming up to where he's getting targeted in this offense, especially if you think there's more volume to come because they haven't had to throw a ton because they've been scoring pretty easily. I think Russell Wilson's passing attempts can only tick up at this point, especially if, like, Chris Carson's hurt and they just do need to pass a little bit more. Would you feel safe? Lockett was a guy that we were kind of on the fence last week. He was really, really close for us. I think he didn't end up being in the top lineup. It was probably a mistake. I think the one mistake that I kind of look back on last week is probably not just being a little bit more bullish on his opportunity, even though we had him as like the 4th highest rated wide receiver. So it wasn't even like we were low on him. It was just, it needed like an extra 100 or two, extra half target to get.
Well, I don't think we can honestly kill ourselves on the Lockett thing because it's easy. Like, hindsight's always 20/20 with these things, but he only had 16 targets through 2 games, right? Like, that's
right.
Fine. But that's not, like, elite. And we'd seen plenty of guys that had just been targeted way more. So, you know, it winds up feeling much worse because he was not only better than the guy we played at a similar price point, but much higher owned. And that's, you don't want to be, that's not a great feeling or a great look. But the guy we played, Julian Edelman, was averaging 12% more targets per game than he was going into it, right? Coming off a bigger week in which he was targeted more and had way more yards. So I don't, and just had plenty of a fine matchup too going up against Vegas. So I don't think it's like a, yeah, I don't know. I don't think it was a glaring mistake by any stretch of the imagination. I think he's a good play. He's still too cheap, but I think people are going to overestimate his prospects after a 3-touchdown game against Dallas. Like, you know, Wilson spreads the ball around enough that I think his kind of half a touchdown per game pace, which is what he had through the first 2 games, that's more of what I'm expecting from him going forward.
A guy I want your opinion on, because we had a clear shift in what's happening with the team and it's going to stay that way, is Keenan Allen. So Keenan Allen gets 8 targets the first week with Tyrod Taylor. And you're like, okay, that's not a guy we wanted to be all that bullish on with the new quarterback situation, especially if Tyrod was going to run the ball a little more. Then they make the move to Justin Herbert, kind of out of necessity because Taylor's on his way to the hospital with a punctured lung. But Allen comes out and over the last 2 weeks has 29 targets. He had 19 targets last week from Herbert. Are we back to Keenan Allen just being an absolute elite target guy, because the last 2 weeks sure would suggest it. And we have a clear change of something that happened, which was a new quarterback that just wants to throw to him all the time. Like, are we back into, we've always liked to play this guy just because.
But I'm feeling nostalgic right now. I feel like this is like Doug and James in 2017 all of a sudden. And I'm here for
the matchup.
I can see Keenan Allen at 5% ownership in our optimal lineup. Sure. Let's go for it.
I mean, if we saw him at 5% ownership, I'd be all for it. Now, this is a bad matchup. The Tampa Bay secondary is really good between Murphy Bunting and Davis and Dean. But so he does get a downgrade on the matchup for sure, 100%. But in terms of the targets, I don't know. There's such a high floor.
I'm here for it. Yeah, I think. And you're right. I think when you see outrageous target share like that, you will see higher ownership. So I don't think we'd be on Keenan Allen Island, but I am comfortable with it. It's kind of like when you see 19 targets, I don't know what the yards expectation ought to be in a situation like that. 132 yards potentially on the low end, right? Like, that's not that many yards for 19 targets, but he is a possession receiver. And, you know, these quarterbacks that are thrust into new situations, they tend to lean into their possession guys. And when it's working, they stick with what works. So I do think that he'll be heavily targeted here. One issue with a one-dimensional passing offense, unless it's like a truly, you know, Randy Moss level talent or something like that, is other teams can just kind of try and choose to just try to take it away, right, with double teams and different schemes and so on. But yeah, I'm ready to play Allen. I don't see, like, the price is just low enough. I think it'd be an interesting discussion for me at like 7,500 or 7,700 or something like that. At sub 7,000, given how much we want to spend elsewhere, let's just go for it.
I'm going to rattle off, we're starting to go long here, so I'm just going to rattle off a couple names that I think you can really consider here. I still feel pretty good about Amari Cooper's target share, even with all the weapons. It just has sustained. That is, even with other guys getting opportunity, like Cedric Wilson comes out of nowhere, or like Michael Gallup has a big game, Cooper's targets, everyone else is getting opportunity, like kind of game by game, except Cooper's just getting them every game. So I'm still pretty comfortable with the Cooper piece, even with the price ticking up. Although, at 7.1 on DraftKings, that's not even totally outrageous to me. Other guys, if Chris Godwin is
another guy, you can't be afraid of Cooper's. Well, I'm just going to jump in on Cooper for a second. You can't be afraid of Cooper's touchdown share either. Given that level of target share, how effective he's been, you just assume that that's coming up. And actually, you should be extremely encouraged. The fact that he scored 13.1, 13, and 13.1 fantasy points per game. Like, those are his game by game on FanDuel. That's incredible consistency. You sprinkle in a touchdown and you're thrilled. So he's close to a cash game lock. Like, I'd prefer to play him even over like Keenan Allen, for instance. I think he's a great play.
Yeah. And then if Chris Godwin misses time, and it looks like he's going to, it looks like Mike Evans probably is going to get a ton of targets. He got a lot of targets when the game Godwin missed before. So I think you could probably tick Evans up a little bit here. Just still waiting on that Godwin news. Maybe we'll know more as the week goes on. And then last couple guys, Robbie Anderson's actually turned himself into an actual conversion guy, and DJ Moore's the guy that can't catch any balls anymore. It's really weird. They've kind of swapped sort of life roles in terms of how they operated. DJ Moore is having trouble with the conversions. The targets are still there. Robbie Anderson's been one of the top targeted wide receivers just in all of football this season. He's a top 10 target guy, and he's converting at 83% of them. So you want to say that maybe touchdowns are coming there. The Carolina offense is bad. Just some interesting guys. I don't know. Any of those guys have any interest for you? We can move on to tight ends and get kind of roll out of here. But thoughts here on Anderson?
Yeah, I wouldn't be super excited to play Anderson, I don't think. I mean, I'm with you that if you're just adding up aggregate target share, it's all there. But in terms of just like, and I don't know if it's like recency bias, but just six targets against LA, as Davis is moving into a greater target share, I think that would be kind of an off chalk play for a guy that's appears to be heading in the wrong direction. So I think I'd be hoping for more. If that's just what we need to do to make the lineups work, then I could consider it. But of the plays we've discussed so far, and it makes sense because he's the cheapest guy, but that'd be the one I'd be least excited for. So that's kind of my feeling on that.
All right, let's roll through tight ends. Let's roll through tight ends. Are we going cheap here at tight ends again? I think that there are some interesting guys that kind of jumped out of nowhere from last week. Let's walk through tight ends and we'll get out of here.
Sure. So I'd love to start with Jimmy Graham. Graham is also part of that Sunday Million winning lineup. And I think he's actually, it certainly came absolutely out of nowhere on the surface, but I think there's a really good reason why he performed so well. So Graham was doing basically nothing. Foles comes in, takes over at quarterback, and seven of Graham's 10 targets last week came after Foles took over at quarterback. We know Foles, different stops in his career, has definitely leaned on the tight end, specifically in Philly. Graham does have that talent pedigree. He's obviously many years removed from being, you know, household name level, like second round pick in season long leagues sort of guy. But we know that he's not just some random guy whose name you've never heard before. And now you're like, yeah, play this guy in DFS? Sure, right? So take all that together with the best performance from last week. And for me, I mean, especially 3,800 on DraftKings, you're getting away with something, I think, by playing Graham. I think there's a chance with Foles under center that he's like an 8 to 10 target a game guy. And this season, we say this every damn year, tight end is an absolute and full-on train wreck. You're either paying way too much for guys that are not going to justify the price, like Mark Andrews or Travis Kelce. Like Travis Kelce, he's not received more than 90 yards a game. You're going to pay more than you would pay for like Tyler Lockett? No way. Like you just simply cannot do it. So yeah, you're going cheap. So then the other guy that we looked at was Jonnu Smith. Jonnu Smith is kind of a funny one because he was looking really touchdown heavy or touchdown dependent rather. And you know, that's kind of the way it goes for tight ends sometimes. Like reasonable cheap tight ends, you're just kind of hoping for four catches and a touchdown. But then last week I thought was really encouraging against Minnesota, where he has a season high 8 targets, second in the NFL behind Jimmy Graham at tight end, by the way. 8 targets, turns it into 61 yards receiving. You know, nothing to write home again. But for a guy, like, it sure looks like Jonnu Smith is not going to kill you on a week-in, week-out basis. And I don't know what more you want from your tight end right now. So if for some reason Graham doesn't look like a palatable play, we'll probably rotate over to Jonnu Smith.
Yeah, the Foles to Graham thing is a real thing. Like you said, in an era or a week or a season where tight ends are just here today, gone tomorrow, right? Darren Waller gets all the targets and then they disappear. You know, this is just like Gronk gets targeted and then he's not. Like, this is just how these guys roll. Like, I don't really know another way to put it. These guys are never the first option in their offense. Whenever they're not the first option, the targets can go away. And at that point, you're just trying to buy as much target share for as cheap as possible. And I think that's, on a week-to-week basis, that's really all we're hunting for. It's like, that's, we're just exactly trying to figure out, yeah, like where your 5 to 6 targets are that is not going to come at the expense of pivoting off of any good plays elsewhere, and you live with the results. And Graham,
you're treating tight end like a defense, and I think that's totally appropriate.
Right. So, like, and Graham just fits the bill there. He's just too cheap. I think he'll be chalk, just based on what he did last week and just how good he was. And it's not incredible. Like, sometimes we're like, oh, these plays would have looked good last week, you know, when they're in your lineup, but sometimes it's warranted, right? It just means that there's something new or fundamental has changed in how the team is schemed, or in this case, who's under center. And as we know from football, that is actually one of the most important things, is who's under center and who does he want to throw to. And if you're just going to get some targets at tight end, that's really, these days, that's as much as you can ask for. All right, we're going to get out of here. DailyFantasySportsRankings.com is the site. DFSR.com. DFSR.com/deals. Get you started on our premium subscription package, optimal lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings, NFL, NBA. We've got the finals coming up here. MLB, as we roll through the playoffs, it's all covered under one subscription package. DFSR.com/deals. Buddy, talk to you tomorrow when we break down every game on the week 4 slate.
Peace.